Archaeologists have pieced together the water bottles of ancient Greece, but it is another thing altogether, it turns out, to try to piece together the music of Greek antiquity. This week in Washington, D.C., the Smithsonian is bringing together some musicians who are giving it their best shot. As Richard Paul found out, it is a lot harder to do than you'd think.
Who doesn't love a story about bringing stuff back from the dead?
It's alive. Oh, it's alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Of people who reconstitute ancient dust.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
I want you to meet some people who do this, bringing back to life the music of geniuses who died 2,500 years ago.
I'm not trying to do anything too scholarly or accurate about it. I just want to have fun with it.
That's John Franklin, a classics professor at the University of Vermont. You know how in the 70s people used to say, "I love the dead, man. I love their music." Well, John really loves the dead's music. Though this music is ancient, the hobby of playing ancient Greek music is really only about 25 years old. In 1970, a German classics professor put out a book that gathered all the fragments of ancient Greek music that were known at the time. A few years later, a Spanish monk made a record album that played some of them. John Franklin says this kicked off a whole new trend with young classic scholars.
A lot of us heard this recording and thought, right, I can do something like that my own way.
But the thing was, the monk's music was mostly an educated guess. There are only 60-some pieces of ancient Greek music, and I'm not talking about 60 symphonies or 60 songs. I mean pieces, chunks of stone and scraps of paper.
It's written on papyrus, which is crumbled away or rotted over the years, so there's holes, literally holes in the music. I mean, think of taking a piece of sheet music, throwing it in the fireplace, pulling it out again, and trying to figure out what was on there originally.
As if that's not hard enough, what Greek music there is has no markings that we'd see as musical. You see some squiggles that are notes that can give you a melody, but there are no clefs, no staves, no notation at all. You might also have a little bit of rhythm, especially if what you're playing comes from a Greek drama, like this from Iphigenia.
Ancient Greek, like Chinese, used a sort of pitch accent. So I'll give you one example, the opening line of the Odyssey. Andra moyenne pe musa politropon hos mala.
Of course, people still live in Greece, and today, many Greek musicians like to link their work to Plato and Socrates.
This has to do with the overuse of the ancient Greek culture in our current culture and in our country nowadays.
That's Christy Stassinopoulou. She's a Greek singer who is really big on the world music charts. She looks at this tendency among modern Greek musicians as kind of a crutch.
I believe that most countries with a very, very old civilization, they make a big use of this old civilization, and they just rest on this.
She wants you to know that there is nothing, no connection between, say, bouzouki music, let alone Yanni, and the ancients. You'd find the roots of today's Greek music in Byzantium,
which is the church music of the Byzantine era.
Rome conquered the Greeks in 146 BC, and what they didn't burn from the ancient world was just plain forgotten over time, as a whole new culture sprung up in its place. Gail Holst-Warhaf is director of Mediterranean Studies at Cornell University.
During this period, influences are coming from everywhere. They have nothing to do with Athens in antiquity. Although Greek culture and Greek philosophy remained an enormously important influence on this Eastern Empire, it was sitting in the East and picked up a very lively and interesting mixture of musical influences from all around it.
So to find the true ancient Greek music, you have to tunnel down as best you can past all those other layers of cultures. You can get some information from ancient books, if you can speak dead languages, but mostly you just have to guess. In that way, it can be like jazz improvisation, like bebop. You know where you're starting, and you make up the rest. That's where you find a split among the people who do this, that part about making up the rest. You're listening to a group called Ensemble de Organografia. Their leader is Phil Newman, who is almost fetishistic about making the music as close as possible to what it might have actually sounded like.
Our goal is to try to remain as true as possible to the style of the rest of the piece.
He and his wife, that's her singing, dress in Greek costumes, and they've built copies of ancient Greek instruments.
Stringed instruments like the kithara and lyra, and then wind instruments like the syrinx, which is panpipes, and then the krupezdon, which helps you sort of keep a nice clicking beat to the music.
John Franklin, the classics professor, has chosen a different route, though. His attitude is, because no one knows what it really sounded like, do whatever you want.
And I've used a lot of computer software that people normally use for pop music production, so sampling and looping, overdubbing, and so on. I take the melodies and rhythms that we know about, and I mix them up. I put beats behind them. I use samples of replica instruments that friends of mine have made. I'll put in modern instruments to fill in the blanks.
So why work this hard at something where you never really know if you're ever going to get it right? Well, for one thing, it's a great puzzle. And look, if you're going to spend time trying to get inside someone's head, why not Aristotle? Why not Euripides? These are, after all, the people who created what we call Western society, whether it's architecture, philosophy, theater. And if you're going to emulate something of theirs, why not their music? After all, the Greeks are the ones who invented the word music, as well as symphony, and chorus, and stereo, mono, synthesizer, melody, harmony, rhythm.
You can see John Franklin and the Ensemble de Organografia next week at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Coming up, the actor John Malkovich plays a very volatile CIA analyst in his new movie. But he's not like that in real life, right?
I mean, for years I always was asked to play sort of cold intellectuals, which I'm not either of those things, or aristocrats, which I'm not, or womanizers.
That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.